tomorrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into the realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis that specialize in a plethora of different art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com or follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or just look for me as JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. I want to thank our longtime sponsor tonight, Altered Reality Magazine. That's www.alteredrealitymag.com. And for those of you who have not visited Altered Reality Mag, when you go there, you'll see it's a portal for publication for many first-time authors of speculative fiction and poetry, but it also features a number of international award winners there, has about 180,000 views a year. It's really a nice place to pop in if you like the kind of stuff that we write there. Check it out. If you're a sci-fi fan, if you're a fantasy fan, dystopian fan, horror, gothic, cryptid, you name it, it's going to be there. You're going to find it. You know, check it out at alteredrealitymag.com. And as we reach our witching hour tonight, and yes, dear listeners, we do have a full hour for you. Let me cast my message spell and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you D&D nerds out there, the duration of my transmutation magic here is about 60 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today we're going to be chronicling the adventures of fellow speculative fiction scribes, the novel guys. So Brian, Jeff, welcome to the realm. Well met, and happy to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us, Joe. We appreciate it.
Well, oh, yeah. We chose people up.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yep. I said we choke people up. We understand.
Well, it's our mutant tell our listeners a little bit about you guys. And I'll start with you, Brian, because I know you a little bit better than I know Jeff. So tell us what you write and where they could find you.
All righty. My name is Brian Krasinski. As Joe mentioned, I am one third of the Novel Guys. We write speculative fiction, so everything from science fiction, fantasy, horror, action, comedy. We can be found skulking around the south central portions of Pennsylvania at various conventions. And you can find our stuff at www.novelguys.com, NovelGuys.com, no spaces, underscores, or dashes. And now I'll pass it on to Jeff.
I am a bookseller first, and I would prefer to be a writer, but, you go through what you got to. Been writing for quite some time, received the Writers of the Future Award, been nominated for a Pushcart Award and a Riesling Award, write steampunk, fantasy, science fiction, whatever, and met Brian at a writing group that I ran a long time ago and got sucked into this.
Great way of putting it. I was going to ask you guys, and let's just dive right into it, right? Because I've always had individual authors on the show. There's plenty of those that we've interviewed. And at one point I also interviewed a mother-daughter tag team, but it was the same book they were writing, and it was kind of like they were yin to their yang. It was a really cool fit with what they were doing and what they were writing. It was a young adult fantasy, like magical realism kind of novels that they were doing. You guys do something similar, but it's like you're like the Three Musketeers here, right? Like, explain where you guys met. Where did the concept of writing together come from, and how difficult is that?
Well, first of all, Joe, we live our lives as magical realism, so I get it. I understand.
I can see where this interview is going to go. It's already 4 minutes in, and I can't wait.
Starting with the dad jokes already. That's what I'm good at. So this match actually started about but literally 20 years ago, where the third novel guy who couldn't make it tonight, his name is Chris Paisano. He and I were friends for a long time, and since we are guys and we communicate like guys, we did not know that we were writers for 10 years until a third party actually told us. So the conversation was, hey, Brian, do you know Chris writes? No. Chris, do you know Brian's a writer? No. Hey, you want to write something together? Okay. So he and I just...
That's so ridiculous, by the way. I don't know how else to say that. Like, how do you not know that about somebody, you know, for 10 years?
I didn't even interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. No, it was very literally 10 years that we knew each other. But even a little bit before that, we did go to a lot of comic book conventions together, and we did hang out a lot. So one day as we were writing, and this was back in the early 2000s, I don't know if you remember if you're a comic book person or not, but Marvel was trying to relaunch their Epic line, and they actually put out an open call for scripts. So he and I put our heads together, and we came up with a couple scripts, and obviously it did not work out. Epic folded very quickly, but we got together, and we started to write some other short stories together, and we kind of came up with an idea for a high fantasy novel. So we decided that we wanted to be writers. We wanted to learn more about the industry, the publishing industry, so when we do approach publishers, we can kind of talk to them a little bit more on their level than the average writer, because we wanted to learn through experience. So we started our own publishing company called Fortress Publishing, Inc. So one of the first things that we wanted to put together were a few comic books. So at the time, we had two artist friends that wanted to join us on our endeavors. Unfortunately, right when it was time to sign the paperwork, they both backed out at the last second. And for some reason, they took their money with them. So we had
that
to come up with an idea.
Right?
I know. I just don't understand it. You know, we were expecting free money from friends, and it just didn't happen. I don't get it. But obviously, we persevered. We did one of our first things that we did publish was a graphic novel that had four separate comic books into it. It was a cost-saving technique, and it was kind of a great way to get our feet wet. So we started to do some conventions together, and then eventually we did finish our novel, and we started working on some other things. And then we wanted to move on from trying to publish comic books, because they're very expensive to produce. They're very headache-inducing, very labor-intensive, and the margins just really aren't there. So we started to publish some magazines where we took outside submissions for short stories, and we were trying to think of what the next logical step was. So we wanted to publish a book, and, you know, we've been in a couple anthologies together, so we were talking about an anthology. However, during one of our actual corporate meetings at Hooters, we got into an argument about zombie TV shows, movies, literature. At the time, I was not a zombie fan. And then Chris argued, as he so often does. So he got mad. He said, "That's it. I'm going to write a short story where you and I are characters in the zombie apocalypse." And I said, "Well, fine, buddy. I'm going to write a short story where we're characters in a vampire story." And it just clicked. We said, "All right, that's our next project." We created a collection of short stories where he and I are actually the characters of the short stories. And they're all horror stories. It's called Scary Tales of Scariness. And then in a
great name,
brief,
by the way. Great name.
Oh, thank you. In a brief moment of clarity or maturity or soberness, I guess, we realized we knew we should not be our own editors. We needed another set of eyes who understood and had a great grasp of the English language and how wordy words go together and make sense, and things like commas and exclamation points and question marks and interrobangs and all of that kind of stuff. So one time I went to a couple times I went to a writer's group that Jeff was the leader of, the cult leader of this writer's group. So I pulled him aside. I asked him, I said, "You know, do you want to be an editor for this short story collection?" And Jeff said,
I'm not smart enough to say no. the reality of it is that while he's saying that Chris and he never knew each other were writers, I was stupid enough to advertise that I apparently knew how to write, supposedly, by writing in this writing group, which gave him a perfect opportunity to roll along and all of a sudden deposit all these stories in my lap, where the people I'm literally looking at are the ones who are the characters. So that's interesting enough to make you stop and look at it and say, all right, maybe they got something here. Turns out they do. Now we got to get it punctuated, and then things get a little bit more interesting. And as a matter of fact, they couldn't stop. So they drug me into it. They made me a character. And not only did they make me a character, they turned me into a goat. They gave me tattoos, and all kinds of other insanity happened to me. And that was before we even got to book number two, where I got sick and tired of it and decided I was trying to kill them. So, you know,
well, what
you can only imagine what these meetings are like.
No, I in my head, I imagine you guys swilling some beer, having a good time, sitting around a card table, not playing cards and yelling at each other. I mean, it reminds me of a time when I was in college. I had three roommates at the time, and the four of us were up until about 4 a.m. arguing, two on one side, two on the other, who would win in a fight, Conan or Darth Vader. And there was, you know, it's like, and the guy, Malik, who lived next door to us, was pounding on the wall for us to shut up because it was literally 3 a.m. And I imagine you guys are the same way. Like, you're having those fights about zombie apocalypse versus vampire apocalypse or whatever it is, and then you're stuck in the middle, Jeff. So I totally get it. Let me ask you guys this, though. Together, you guys write under some pen names that are – that because you mentioned way, way early, you asked me, and I never had a chance to answer the question about whether or not I love comic books. And, of course, I do. I'm a nerd. I'm doing a show about, you know, with you guys, right? So of course I like comic books. And the pen names you guys have chosen, like Victor Bloodstone and Apollo Harrison and Jordan Corvus, they all sound like comic book names. Did you guys do that on purpose to kind of honor that sort of love of the game, or were they names that you just all gravitated to separately, had nothing to do with comic books, because they all sound comic booky to me?
It's a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. I mean, clearly there's definitely some influence from our childhood and teen years, getting lost in the colorful pages of comic books or the fantastical worlds of the classic novels. When we decided to come up with these pen names, it was the point where Chris and I, over the years, Jeff actually just didn't leave. So he continued to work with us for some reason. And when I say didn't leave, I mean chained in our basement. So,
well,
it's all semantics.
Like the GIMP in fiction, right?
Exactly. Jeff is the GIMP. That's what we're walking away with here from tonight. We have learned that Jeff is the GIMP. So we decided to really pull Jeff into this and make him a full-time partner with us in the writing and celebration of the publications and publishing. But two names on a book cover is difficult, and putting three names on is almost next to impossible. So we decided to come up with pen names so it'll be a lot easier to put on book covers and bylines. And then we took it a step further and decided that if we are going to come up with pen names, let's have them be meaningful and have a different one for each of the genres that we really want to focus on. So Victor Bloodstone is our pen name for horror, suspense, and gothic. Apollo Harrison is our pen name for sci-fi, fantasy, and steampunk. And then Jordan Corvus is our pen name for young adult, new adult, and fantasy romance. But we did do a lot of back and forth about what the names should be. We did a lot of research. We did a lot of collaboration. Victor Bloodstone, you know, we just kind of started to pick a couple names that, you know, really made you really think of horror? Like Victor's, you kind of associate Victor with horror. Bloodstone, of course, you know, is right there and in your face. And we did not mind that it's really on the nose. When you see Victor Bloodstone, you think horror, but we wanted that. We wanted a name that's easy to remember and to take with you. Apollo Harrison, Apollo because of, you know, the Greek god as well as the space missions. Harrison, kind of a combination with Harrison Ford, a great actor who's been in a lot of wonderful fantasies, as well as Harry Harrison, a great old-time science fiction writer. And then with Jordan Corvus, we wanted something, you know, a little mysterious, a little on the younger side. And then we rolled with it.
Did that even
come close to answering your question? I can't even really remember what the...
It really did. Like, so, well, when you think about it, you hear this, if you're right. I mean, Victor Bloodstone's right on the nose. It sounds like a right? And Apollo Harrison sort of sounds like a superhero in a strange way. And Jordan Corvus, when I see the name Corvus, I immediately go to Corvinus and then Underworld and Kate Beckinsale, who is like my you know, distant, long-lost love affair that never happened, right? So, like, you know, I immediately think of those things, and I love the way you guys wove them into – you gave some thought to them, and you assigned them to the type of novels and the genre. And I really think that's a – that is a really great way of doing that. And I know I have one friend who his real name, I won't use, but his pen name is Simon King. And I asked him why he chose Simon King for a name, and he said Stephen King was his favorite writer, and he wanted to see his book on the shelf next to Stephen King's, right?
Yeah.
When you hear that, you're like, well, he had a really specific, like, on the dot, this is why I did that. And I figured there was something behind that, and you guys explained that beautifully. But I have to stop you for a second because I've heard this twice now, and I want to get into it because a lot of our listeners or readers, obviously many of them are authors or aspiring authors, but we said steampunk twice. And when I hear steampunk, and I know steampunk is its own genre, and I want you guys to go in a little bit in depth on what steampunk means to you, because what steampunk means to me, and I'm assuming many of the people that are listening, are sort of like a Victorian era, 19th century, set in London. There's some magic. There's these funky, you know, almost Tim Burton-esque technologies that make their way into it. And it kind of follows along real life, but it's sort of like multiversed. So it's like next to, it's almost like adjacent to reality. Is that what steampunk it means to you? And if not, what does it mean?
Yes. Next question.
You want me to get that one?
No, that's great. No, you really described quite a bit about what steampunk is. Actually, I'm going to pass this question on to Jeff because he is the steampunk expert of the three of us.
I do actually have a book out right now that's essentially the adventures of Cassandra Layden. It's called Spirit Seeker. It's an alternate history idea with steampunk, and the main character has the ability to communicate with the dead, but because the dead don't have any breath, they can't speak, so she had to learn to read their lips. So you basically end up solving crimes, getting involved with a bunch of insane things like alligators, androids, and airships. It's a wide open thing, and that's the best part about it. It's adventure. It's that sort of spirit of adventure type thing. And at the same time, you can just play. It's so much more fun to me to write in that, and I really enjoy doing it because you do have a few things that are going to constrain you, your time period. London? Oh, no. London's a great place to be, but you don't have to be in London. I'm actually writing a story right now set in Constantinople. So it's a wide open type thing there too.
So, you know, for those that are listening and have never, you know, delved into the steampunk genre, it has mixes of science fiction meets fantasy meets, you know, horror. In a lot of cases, I think that, you see a lot of steampunk that bleed into anime and or comic books. I think it's really artistic. It's something that people might recognize if they saw it and not know what it is, but they were like, oh yeah, I know what that is, but what is that called? Because steampunk is just a name. It's hard to forget, but it's also hard to understand unless you delve into it. And it's really cool that you guys, you know, do stuff in there. And Jeff, I mean, do you have a favorite steampunk that's out there that you try to emulate or you've found inspiration from in your writing?
That's a good question. I like George Mann does some wonderful things. I'm not going to remember his name now. You know what? I'm going to carry the bone so I can go look at it real quick because this is the habit of the bookseller. You've got a million and one books. Tim Akers is probably someone that's sort of underappreciated. Is a fantastic one too. And there we go. Anubis Gates by Tim Powers. Tim Powers, K.W. Jeter, and I'm going to forget his name. Blake, I think. Blakely is the other one that are known for forming the term steampunk.
Yeah, it's just a really cool genre. And for those of you listening that haven't read it, I would encourage you to do it because it's really good. If you like graphic novels, if you like comics, and or if you like that real kind of gritty novel stuff, it's a perfect genre for those that like fantasy and sci-fi and a little bit in each. And so, but I'll leave it at that. Brian, a little earlier you mentioned that you guys have a convention season coming up that'll sort of kick off in April. For those that are listening and tuning in, listening to you guys, a lot of folks are out there trying to do the same stuff. And sometimes they're hitting bookstores, other times hitting libraries. For those that are delving into the convention marketplace, as the novel guys, have you found it successful? Is it worth the money putting in a table, spending the money to get a hotel room, in some cases flying in or driving in and the per diems that go along with this? Is the goal to see your money back and just get exposure, or is the goal of these things to really make money? And what have you found, varying results, or do you think going to these conventions really help you move the needle, not only with fans and build your fan base, but also with book sales?
I'm going to go with varying results. Definitely when we first started off, like I said, we wanted to learn by experience. So we were going into this only as attendees. We only knew what we knew as paying customers. So when we were on the other side of the table, it's a whole new world, a whole new learning curve, a whole new experience. So over the years, it did take us quite a while to really get our feet under us, and we were experimenting the whole time. We were experimenting with, different giveaways. We were experimenting with different sales pitches, different signages, different posters, anything to catch people's eyes. But our basic philosophy is we go in there to have fun. I mean, the whole reason why we were attendees before we were participants is we have fun at these. We like the subject matter. We like going to the conventions. We're fans first, and we just go to have a good time. So our basic goal with every convention is just to make table, because our philosophy is even if we weren't there with a table, we'd still be there. So this same hotel cost we'd be incurring, the same food cost, the same drive time and cost would be happening if we were attendees or if we were participants. So if we're there as participants and we make table, then that means we got into the show for free. But
That's a really good way of putting it, because I think a lot of folks are afraid. You go into a library, they're free. You go into a book signing at a store, they're free, save for the time value of money. When you're putting in your time and effort to advertise and social media and all that kind of fun stuff around that, those things are choices that you make. But when you're going to a convention, you're paying to get access to those fans. And the conventioners know that. And oftentimes, they're gonna shoehorn you in somewhere. You might not be in the best place, at the convention in the beginning. But it sounds to me like you guys knew you were going to be there. You were going to geek out and go anyway. So while you're there, you might as well sell some stuff and really kind of promote the novel guys and the books that you're doing. So that's, you know, I think that's sage advice for those of you who haven't done that. And I will say this on top of that, too, as you do more and more conventions, the conventioneers will recognize you, especially if you're successful. And they've often asked, they'll ask you to do classes and or things and offset costs or give you better table selection, you know, if you help out and things like that, too. So keep that in mind. It's not just selling your stuff. It's also networking with a bunch of people that will help you sell your stuff as your market grows. And speaking of books and selling books, I know you guys, Brian, when I saw you guys at Steel City Con in Pittsburgh a few months back, actually last month, you gave me a copy of your new book, The Killer of Devils. Let's talk a little bit about your work. We're a half hour into this interview, and I haven't asked you anything about your books yet, so we're going to start down this path. I know this has got to be exciting. Every time an author puts out a new book, it's got to be an exciting time. Tell us a little bit about The Killer of Devils, where it came from, and what kind of inspired it.
Oh, boy, this is it's going to be a long story here. So The Killer of Devils is is one series in a universe that we are creating that are actually three different series of novels, but they're all connected. So basically what we're trying to do is we're creating the Marvel movie universe, but with horror. So you know the old movie monsters, you know, the vampires, the werewolves, the zombies, mummies, things like that. They've hit this certain level, right? Where sometimes it's hard to pinpoint who started it, what's the first werewolf story. You know, you can find it on the internet, but no one really knows that off the top of their head. You know, where did zombies come from? They come from a bunch of different places. Even with vampires, there's arguments about which story is the first vampire story. And they've just been out there so often and so long that nothing is really a ripoff anymore. It's all part of a trope. So we're looking at these new movie monsters, and we're seeing that they're really starting to get to this certain level. So now you just have these, you know, mask-wearing slashers, you have nightmare monsters, you have demons, you have living dolls. You know, we're still at the stage where you can point to what started it, but we are now entering a stage where you have these new characters who are kind of based on these same tropes, and there's still new and interesting and fresh ideas to come out of this. So we decided, let's wrap our arms around all these new archetypes, all these new tropes, and let's pull them all into one universe. So the first idea we had is, what if they all have children? And these children are all adults now, but they just don't know who their parents are from one reason or another. So that is the premise of one series called The Progeny of Devils.
The interconnectivity then comes from them finding out their parents are. I figured. All right, I see where you're going with that.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So they actually don't know about their parents until they find out that they're being hunted. So in book number one, our characters are coming together because they're being hunted, and then they start to learn more about their parents, and then they have to start wondering about themselves, because if I'm the child of a monster, does that make me a monster? So then we wanted to take a step back and do another series about telling the stories of the parents. So this series is called The Legacy of Devils. So each novel is a standalone novel about one of the parents of these kids. So we have two of those published already. The first one is called Hammer and Blood. So another thing we wanted to do with these, instead of just throwing these new monsters at teenagers like you see a lot in the movies, we actually wanted to match the monsters up against someone who could take care of themselves. So in Hammer and Blood, our elevator pitch is, just imagine if John Wick fought Jason Voorhees.
In this series in particular, it sounds to me like it's both an origin story for the kids, but it also sort of like a legacy story for the parent. and you all. But this isn't supposed to be campy. It sounds to me like this is straight up horror.
Well,
right? Am I right on that? Or is, yeah, okay.
Absolutely. We're. If anything, we would call it action horror because all of our books do have. They are action packed, so there is a lot more action than like the traditional horror movie. But like for example, with Hammer and Blood, we are taking two different tropes and mashing them together. But we really kind of hit upon a lot of what makes these tropes.
Brian?
Uh-oh.
Now I know he's find out he's being hunted himself, and he's trying to figure out who's hunting him. Meanwhile, for our quote-unquote Jason character,
Jeff, are you still there?
I'm still there.
Yeah, we can hear him cutting in and out.
Do you
mind taking over here? Yeah.
I don't know how far I can take it, but, oh, well, wait, we're back. And now we're not.
Can you still hear me?
We can now.
I've got you.
Fell off there for a second.
Okay. So that is the Legacy of Devils. So that's the series about the parents. So finally, the Killer of Devils. So if you have monsters and you have children of monsters, you need a monster hunter. So that's where the Killer of Devils comes in. Her name is Callista Lindquist. She is a final girl, and she and her mother never want anyone to experience these horrors again, so they actively hunt down these monsters.
And what a great name, too, Callista Lindquist. That is... But it sounds to me like she has sort of like a Witcher vibe going on, right? Like kind of like a blood hunter. Is that
kinda
true?
Yeah. She's one of the things that we really wanted to tackle with her story is if you are a final girl, you're going to have a certain level of PTSD. You are not going to be able to slip back into society again on any level. So we really wanted to actually explore that aspect as well.
Yeah, a little Halloween. You mentioned Jason Voorhees before, but the Michael Myers version of that, where Jamie Lee Curtis can't get it back together, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We appreciate that that aspect of her character as well. So that's something that we wanted to explore with this.
So let me ask you guys this, and Jeff, as a bookseller, this might be the question for you. What do you guys do to promote your novels? I mean, again, the folks that are listening tonight and the folks that are going to listen to this link tomorrow and beyond, they're interested in knowing what you guys have done to be successful in selling these novels and what can they do. Many of these folks are indie authors or aspiring authors, and they might not have the backing of a publisher or a publicist. So what have you guys done in the self-promotion category? If you can give a couple of pieces of maybe nuggets of wisdom here to help our listeners along.
I think we can give you nuggets, but I don't know if they're going to be wisdom. I think a lot of what it's been a little bit of trial and error because we've done everything from rack cards sent to bookstores that have had – limited, if any, response. We've done Facebook advertising. We've done advertising in magazines. And we've tried to track what we've been getting from it, and it really has been kind of slim to nil. The trick is when you're right in front of that person and you speak to that person about your book, wow, it's so easy to turn that switch a lot of times. I mean, you know what? Not everybody walks away with a book, but Brian does not let people walk away. So, you know, that helps. Yeah, and the in-person thing is definitely part of it. But at the same time, too, trying to go, you know, get places where you can, you know, conventions, book signings, anything that you can do, get on a panel, get in front of somebody, do what we're doing right now. Talk to them about why you're doing what you're doing. Get your name out. Part of it's the long tail. You know, the more things you have out there, the more people are likely to run into you. We've got our own little catalog of books that you can, you know, get a hold of right now that is freely handed out. along with a little reminder of don't forget to like us on Amazon. Because obviously if you hit that metric and you've got the right number of reviews and stuff, then you get put in front of more people. And you know what? Get fantastic freaking artwork. The artwork for Killer of Devils is absolutely amazing. And when you're crazy and you buy, like, what was it? Is it 12-foot or 9-foot, Brian, thing of it? It's really hard to miss. And you get that image in people's faces, and all of a sudden they're like, what the hell is that? I need to know what that is. That's all it takes.
You know, have you found, you mentioned Facebook ads. You know, have you found success in, you know, that kind of, a lot of people see varying levels of success. And I don't know if there's a scientific way in and around that. I think that, you know, I have not tried it. My publisher hasn't tried it. But I've got friends, both indie and traditional, that have tried it. And sometimes it works really well. Other times, and it just seems like it's kind of random. I mean, do you guys have a strategy for that? Or does it sort of vacillate in the same way for you guys?
We talked to the expert, and it turned out to be the magic fucking eight ball.
That's like, exactly. Yeah,
it didn't work. Oh, my God, why?
Yeah, we have it. Again, we're going to go back with the varying results. One thing that it certainly does, excuse me, is it does get people to at least click on our stuff. So as long as there's a really good link to the product, you know, sometimes people check it out. There's all kinds of marketing strategies and theories. And, I mean, obviously marketing is a big thing if colleges offer entire classes and degrees on marketing, whereas, you know, we're stumbling around just trying to figure it out on our own. So, you know, I think the big thing is getting your name out there as often as possible in front of the right eyes. And I do believe one of the good things about Facebook ads is you really can target your audience. You have a lot of control over who is going to see your ad. So, for example, anytime we do a Facebook ad for one of our horror novels, one of the first things we do is we target people who like Stephen King. And then we target people who like e-books. We target readers, obviously. So Facebook does allow you to target these people. Now, whether they like what they see enough to click on it, that's a whole different thing. You know, you hear all these different theories where, like, a new customer needs to see your product at least 7 times before they even registers with them that they're even looking, what they're even looking at. And then you have to go a couple more times for them to register that it's something they want to like. So there's all kinds of things like that. We have heard that the people that have not had success with Facebook ads, we found are people who try it once and then just never do it again. They don't look at the results. They just say it didn't work and then they move on. So instead of trying to learn from what they were doing or trying it again, they just stop and move on.
Yeah, you mentioned ebooks in there, and I'm going to spin this a little bit because I understand you guys are doing your first audiobook, and I know that audiobooks, speaking of growing marketplaces, audiobooks are now the fastest growing sector of our marketplace. And in part, I think it's because people read differently than they did before. They've got options, right? They can have an e-reader. They can put earplugs in and go on a train to work or a bus to work and listen to a novel. Or you're just in different stages of life where, you know, you're at your kid's soccer game or you're doing laundry and it's easier for you. You don't have to carry around a book when you're on a plane. You can listen to it. Have you guys made the decision to go in that direction because of the growing marketplace? Or is this something you're experimenting to see how many of these books you sell? Or, you know, what inspired you to get into the audiobook circuit? I mean, I have audiobooks that are companions to every one of my novels, but I think it's almost expected in my, like, epic fantasy, dark fantasy stuff. you guys write in a different genre. Is it expected in your genre too, or you know, why are you guys dabbling in audiobooks now?
Hey Brian, can I hit that real quick?
Oh sure.
No, one of the things that you mentioned there, if you've got one for each one of your books, with an audiobook, most cases, you know, they're not actually going out and buying a CD. They're just nowadays they're downloading it. So they hit the button and it's right there. I mean, it's just like at the end of an ebook with the link to go straight to the next one. And what I was saying about the long tail, if you've got one, they're going to want to go to the next one because you've already established that. And the other thing too is that with an audiobook, your narrator has the ability to breathe more life into a character that's easier for them to grasp without having to put too much attention to it. If they're not necessarily, you know, like you said, they're doing it, what they're doing something else. The way that person is reading things, and the person who is reading Killer of Devils is doing a good job of it. They're giving that life to that character, and that's what's really kind of capturing people. There you go, Brian.
You know, it's funny it's funny you say that because it's absolutely correct. You know, my wife will not read any books, not just mine, but any. She's not a reader, but she listens to them, and you know those voice actors. That's their job, right? Like they're spinning this up to create an environment in which you fall in love with characters, and whether that's through inflection, whether it's through the acting, whether it's through the dialect. Like I, you know, if they're speaking in a Scottish brogue or they're speaking in a broken tongue, I think that adds to it, right? You're getting someone acting it out as opposed to you reading it in your head. And you know, I always find that people complain about when they read a book that they love and then they go see a movie. And they say, well, the book was better than the movie. Well, of course it was, because when you read the book, everything was perfectly aligned with your imagination. So you know exactly what those characters look like. And if they're miscast to you in the book, like perfect example of this is Tom Cruise in the first Jack Reacher movie. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I've read all those Lee Child books, and you expect this guy, 6'10", muscle-bound guy, and you get little itty-bitty Tom Cruise. And you're like, what is this? This isn't Reacher. But he did a good job in it. Like, the movie was entertaining, and there wasn't anything wrong with him. But the guy that does it on the Netflix or whatever it is, Amazon.
Alan Ritchson.
He looks like the goddamn guy. Like, you can't get away from it. You're like, that is believably Jack Reacher for me. And I think that voiceover actors, they're the bridge between that, right? So they take a character in your book, and they add something. And then all of a sudden, you can't hear that character in your head without that voice, right? Without that brogue, without that drawl,
right.
Without that whatever. And I do think that adds to it. You know, and even though people might say, "Oh, I don't like it when things are miscast." If you listen to book one, then you're going to expect that same voice in book two, book three, book ten, right? And I think you nailed it, Jeff. I think you really, really did. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I know you were handing it off to Brian there, but I just wanted to kind of underscore that because I really think that that's an important, especially knowing how quickly and how big this marketplace is growing into. So sorry, Brian, I had to jump in there for a second, but go ahead, finish your thoughts, guys.
Oh no, that was perfectly well stated. Like Jeff mentioned, we had always wanted to do audiobooks. We know the audience is there. We know the audience is still growing at a very quick pace. And inevitably, every time we're at a show, there are attendees who come up to our table and they ask if we have anything on audiobook. So we know that demand is there. The reason why it just took us so long to get to this point is it's fairly cost prohibitive. It was not a cheap way to get something done until fairly recently. Just like with how technology changed to help us writers have the ability to actually now publish our own works if we chose to, that's kind of happening in the world of audio. So there are a lot of amazing and talented voice actors out there who are now able to bring their talents to the masses without needing to go to expensive studios. They can do it you know, obviously in their home systems and still have really amazing quality. When we just happen to stumble upon actually not only one, but two really great voice actors working on two different novels for us. And they are, from what they're turning in, they are absolutely knocking it out of the park, not only with their talents, but with the quality of the audio that they're turning into us.
It's funny, too, because it's one of those things where you have to realize you're probably not going to be able to do this yourself. And it takes a little bit of, oh, we recorded a few things. Right. And then it's the realization of, yeah, there are people who are experts at this. They're going to be a little better at this than us. But it's worth a try.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
listening to my own voice narrating my own stuff.
Right.
I couldn't
exactly.
Do it.
Exactly.
It would scare the hell out of me.
No.
It would be a train wreck, right, guys? I mean, these guys are professionals. This is what they do.
Right. My voice is terrible. No one wants to listen to it. It's awful. So I figure, you know what, we'll happily pay someone to read the books for us.
Good. Well, look, guys, we're coming to the end of the show here. And, Jeff, I don't know if Brian prepared you for this, but and I might spring this on you. But at the end of every one of my shows, I do a lightning round. And because there's two of you guys, I have the extended lightning round. So this is like the lightning storm round. So I usually wait for the last 5 minutes and hammer away. But I've got 10 minutes of this. So you each are going to get some of that. But before we go into the lightning round, I do have to point something out that I found on your bios, and I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to be disappointed if you can't do this, but I'll understand if you can't. So in your bios, .. writing novels, stories, articles, comic books, reviews, and the occasional ridiculous haiku. I am going to ask one of you guys to recite a haiku for our audience tonight, and if you can't do it, I get it, but please, for the love of God, tell me one of you guys have a haiku to do this. You would be the first haikuist, if that's the right thing. Say, I don't know what you call someone who writes haikus. I guess they're haiku writers. But you know, if one of you guys could do one, that would be fantastic. You'd be groundbreaking. In 2 years of the show, you'd be the first haiku orator on the show. So if not, I get it. So I'll put you guys both on the spot. I don't know if anybody could step up to the plate or not, but here it is. Here's your time. I want to hear a haiku.
All right, you ready?
Are you ready? My fingers on my nose, not it.
Okay. I thought you were going to say you were going to hang up now.
All right, ready?
With bated breath.
Haiku on the spot. Damn Joe challenging us now. The realm is a blast.
You did something. You went above and beyond, my friend. You did it. You did haiku improv. Like, I'm not even sure that exists. You might have created your own genre. So, well played. All right, so let's go into the lightning round, fellas. Now, I know there's three of you, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Who is Cartman? Who is Kyle? And who is Stan? And I'm going to assume that none of you are Kenny. Right. We're going to put Kenny aside for a
Kenny.
Second.
Because... I am so Kenny.
Yeah, Jeff is Kenny. Even though he was not an option, Jeff is Kenny.
All right. So, oh, my God. They killed Jeff? You bastards. All right. Well, then who's Cartman? Who's Stan? And who's Kyle?
I have a feeling I'm Cartman. I would try to say I'm one of the other ones, but I have a feeling Jeff, Chris, and everyone else on the planet would say I'm Cartman. Then obviously Chris would be one of the other two.
All right, so Jeff, you agree that he's Cartman, and you agree that you're Kenny.
Oh, yeah, it's not a question.
We're in agreement there. All right, well, I'll let you guys off the hook on that. And you guys can. Yeah, tell me what Paisano wants when you get Chris. I want to know which one that is. You got to email that to me, and I'll append it in the show notes.
Wonderful.
All right, so this question is for both of you, and I'll start with you, Jeff. As a writer / publisher, what's the best money you've ever spent, and why was that money the best you've spent?
Probably on Office 365. No, I mean
just a subscription, right?
Yeah, I mean just it's one of those things where it's just like, yeah, I mean, my problem is that I'm dyslexic, and I can literally watch it fix the stuff when I screw it up. Yeah, whenever you're on the old key typewriter and you had to, like, backspace and everything like that, yeah, that's the thing for me.
All right. How about you, Brian? What's the best money you've ever spent as an author?
Actually, it's going to be the hammer. We have a giant hammer. We're talking like the head that's like 3 foot with maybe a 2 foot diameter cylinder attached to some heavy duty PVC pipe. It's obviously a prop, but we have.
Can you hang it over your head like the sword of Damocles, or what do you do with
it? Well, we have it tucked behind the table at conventions. So anytime someone comes over and they purchase a novel that we have 2 novels with the hammer on it, we ask them if they just notice that there's a giant hammer on the cover. We happen to have a giant hammer behind our table. Would it be okay if we took a picture of you holding the giant hammer? The looks that we get range from pure shock and fear to unbridled joy and glee. And then, of course, we grab some wonderful pictures. We have some great social media fodder. We create unique experiences that they can get literally nowhere else.
You know, that's funny because of 2 things. First, I thought you were going to say they'd bang a gong with it and make a sound like the cash things where you go to, hey, you grab the cash out of the air and that's how much you get off your car. Like that kind of stuff, like a real novelty kind of thing. The other thing is, Jeff, I guess Brian doesn't understand the idea behind a lightning round, right?
Nope.
Pretty long-winded answer to that, but I'll let it slide. We're having fun. All right, Brian, I'm going to switch back to you. I'm going to let you go first in this one, then I'll hit
Jeff. I'll be faster, I swear.
No, you don't have this season. a library is burning, and you rush in to help, and you could only save one book, and that book can't be any of yours. Which book would that be, and why would you pick it?
Perfume by Patrick Susskind. It's my favorite novel.
Well, that's simple enough. How about you, Jeff?
Going to go get the leather-bound copy of Dune.
Ooh.
Frank Herbert.
Ooh. So, and it has to be the leather-bound copy, not like the Necronomicon, the skin from whatever, and all the Evil Dead movies and stuff like that, right? All right, I get you.
Nah, because that's your Desert Island book, and if you have to, you can boil the skin and eat it.
I can tell you guys write horror. So, all right, Jeff, I'm going to stay with you, and then I'm going to flip back to Brian. Your favorite place to go conventioning, based on the fact you guys, I know you guys do this, and why is it your favorite place?
You know, I really enjoyed BaltimoreCon for a number of years. It's not something I've been back to in a while, but I really did like that. Yeah, when it used to be at the Hunt Valley Hotel.
Brian?
I'm going to go with Creature Feature in Gettysburg. It's close enough to our house where we commute. The convention is small but big. We have a lot of great fun, know a lot of people, have a blast.
And that's horror only, it sounds like to me. It's like a horror thing.
It is horror, but it is so cozy. It's a weird word to use for a horror convention, but it is a very cozy convention where people who aren't into horror can come in and not feel intimidated, not feel skeezed out, not feel like they're walking into a dangerous situation.
Yeah, no, I get you. So, Brian, I'm going to stick with you, just rotating back and forth here. What's that? Now, I got it. The thing, and this bleeds into my next question, because you said Gettysburg. And when I think of Gettysburg, I think of ghosts. And you guys are horror writers, right? So what have you taken any experience in your real life and baked it into one of your horror novels because it scared the hell out of you?
Oh, I'm going to say no to that. However, in the books where we wrote ourselves in as characters of horror stories and or science fiction stories, we have included plenty of real-life experiences in that, including upsetting a couple strippers at a strip club.
Which that might be a horror book on its own.
Yeah, pretty, yeah. Us trying to be cool at a strip club
Oh, it's horrible. Just horribly bad, right? It just went sideways from Jump Street. How about you, Jeff? I mean, have you, like a ghost hunt? Have you seen a ghost? Have you witnessed a murder? Like anything crazy, or you know, or is this something you've just found inspiration in because it lives and breathes in your soul?
I don't have anything that compares to the strip club. I've seen stuff I can't explain. That was not part of it. I don't know that I've really ever incorporated it. I'm an outdoor guy. I spent a lot of time outdoors. I did actually use one of the spots that I like to go fishing as a background for something that was a slasher-type story that involved fairies that came back like locusts. So that's about the closest thing, probably.
Yeah, you know, I thought you were when you said you were an outdoorsman. I thought you were going to go Sasquatch or some sort of like werewolf
right.
kind of thing.
Oh, no, he's
a funky monster. But that's
yeah,
that is
Brian,
pretty
we're,
good.
Brian's a big foot.
We're all from Pennsylvania. We all know someone who has a Bigfoot story.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. All right, Jen. So last question, Jeff. I'll start with you. You're invited to a lunch with one author or poet, living or dead. Who do you take to lunch, and why?
Ian M. Banks. It's one of the most amazing space opera people, tremendously talented, also wickedly humorous. Poor the rest of us for not having him to continue to write his culture series. Passed away a couple years ago. Miss him every day.
How
big
about
influence.
You, Ryan?
I'm going to go with Mark Twain. I think he would just be a great guy to hang out with. Yeah, obviously, he has stories out the wazoo to tell you, and he's kind of borderline, you know, like tall tale, you know, from what we've been taught about him, so you get to learn about, like, what actually he's like.
That makes sense. And, you know, and as long as I've been doing the show, no one has ever said Mark Twain, and I love that because it's unique, and he's deserving of someone you would want to spend time over a lunch with. You know, you could ask him 20 questions and then 20 more, right? Like that's the kind of guy you get with him. He's like the Yogi Berra of literature. So anyway, gents, look, I we're coming to the end of the show. I don't care which one of you goes, but you know, you guys can pick here. How can readers find your books, and how can they get a hold of you on social media?
They can find our books basically anywhere books are sold. You know, just type in any of our names, and to find out any of our names, they can go to novelguys.com. What is our Facebook page? I think it's at Brian.Chris.Jeff or something like that. We should be pretty easy to find.
Cool. Well, gents, thanks again for coming to the realm tonight. And as our time is coming to a close, I want to thank our sponsor again tonight, AlteredRealityMag.com. You know, those guys do a great job over there. And if you haven't checked out their stuff, go to AlteredRealityMag.com and download some of their serials, download some of the short stories. Check out, they have a quarterly magazine, their winter magazine is coming out here in a few weeks. Check them out. If you're a fan of speculative fiction or speculative poetry or haiku or oration, you may find it there. Again, thanks for everybody being on. Jeff, Brian, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.